The following podcast is a presentation of Spectrum One, online and on demand at SpectrumOne.net. The following Spectrum One podcast may contain language that some may find offensive. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to another episode of the North American Wrestling Connection, is sponsored by WrestleChat.net and the Freaking Awesome Network here on Spectrum One. My name is Jason Block. Nikki Haman is still away on her media project, so I have the keys to the kingdom one more time. My three people today are, of course, first from the other side of the world, Shane Beeman. How are you, sir?
Going brilliantly.
And Chris Waters from Florida. Hi, are you guys in the path of the hurricane?
I don't know yet, but I am bracing myself in all every way possible down here.
And back from the trip to one of the best wrestling towns in the world, Chicago, Cindy Seidelman, I believe. Is that right? You were in Chicago?
Yeah, I was in Chicago. Quick story, though. It has to deal with wrestling. For a surprise on Thursday, my friend Jamie, who's on the BSFFL, we were going to go to the Squared Circle restaurant.
Cool! I've always heard. I've heard that's a good place to eat.
But they gave the customer, they gave their staff the whole week off.
Oh.
From Thursday to Tuesday.
Oh,
so we couldn't go.
Oh man! Oh. Oh, that hurts.
Perfect good news, bad news segment there.
That is definitely bad news. Excuse me, that is bad news. Let us start with some legit bad news here.
Yeah.
It was found out over the last week since we were here last that one of the legendary managers of all time passed away. His name is Harry Fujiwara. You and any old school wrestling fan, and I know Cindy you are, and I know Chris you are, would know him as Mr. Fuji.
Yep.
Indeed.
Cindy, why don't you tell us what your impressions of this man was?
Not afraid to poke fun at himself, especially during the times where he managed Don Morocco and had the Mr. Fuji trilogy. These were three mini-movies, Fuji General, Fuji Bandito, and Fuji Vice. And they were very hilarious. Also, a lot of people might know Mr. Fuji as a manager, but even before that, in the early 80s, he was a WWF Tag Team Champion with, I think it was Saito.
Mr. Saito, that is correct. I'm looking at it right now. Yep.
And before that, Professor Tanaka.
Yeah.
And, exactly. And he was inducted into the Hall of Fame in 2007. He was also known as managing some guy named Yokozuna for a while.
Mm-hmm. Where I first saw him, actually, which looking back at old footage, it's kind of weird that how much different he looked from when he was managing Yokozuna to when he was before managing.
What I loved, Shane, about Mr. Fuji was he was an unrepentant bad guy. An unrepentant heel. And you don't get that in a heel manager these days.
No, you don't. These days, heel managers are more, are a bit more laid back. Whereas Mr. Fuji, he just did not give a crap. I mean, especially when he threw powder in people's faces, you see that evil laugh of his every
it
time.
It was salt in the eye, but yes, salt. Because of course, remember, his idea was to treat wrestlers as you know, sumo warriors or whatever, because he manages people like Demolition, Powers of Pain, also, let's see.
Don Morocco, as I mentioned earlier.
Don Morocco, Yokozuna, and he retired around 1997, but this is a guy who you could say is like one of the top 10 managers of all time, because he got his guys over. He got his guys over, and he was unrepentant in what he did. And he will be missed because of who he was. He was a good, but you're right. Also, going back, Cindy, the Fuji Vice, if you watched it, this was entertainment. This was sports entertainment before really sports entertainment was called that, if you really want to call it. It was one of the first major attempts at that.
Right. And I think that was the charm of Fuji and Morocco and that pairing. They meshed off each other so well. And it's really apparent with Fuji, because if you take a look at everybody that he managed, he meshed with their styles really well. Like, for example, his Demolition, when he took over for a handsome Jimmy Valiant, he started to wear some of the face paint that Demolition would wear and would carry that on with the Powers of Pain. Later on, turning that when he was managing the Orient Express. And he would have something of their of his lieges with him. Like, I remember when Bob Orton was managed by Fuji for a short while before Morocco turned face. Sometimes he would wear a cowboy hat instead of his traditional odd job bowler hat that he would wear.
Yeah, and but again, the acting, you could tell the acting was so bad. They probably did it all in one take, but it was so funny. Fuji Vice and Fuji General. And Fuji Bandito. I mean, Chris, have you ever seen those skits on YouTube?
I'll confess, I've been kind of behind on that. I thought when Nikki and I were doing some of the old Saturday Night Main Events on paper review, that we were going to see those, and I was upset that we didn't. So I'm going to have to take some time now to actually watch them in full. I've only seen bits and pieces, but they are fun.
They are exactly. I mean, it's like they took it so seriously and so straight laced that it's so bad it's good.
Especially Fuji General.
Uh huh. Fuji General. This is a guy who will be missed. I mean, right now, if you could say the greatest living manager right now is Bobby Heenan, would you say that right now?
I would say
so. Of old school, what I mean, you know.
That's, to me, that I'm torn between him and Cornette.
Uh-huh. And trust me, we will get to Cornette in a second, because
technically, if you want to go old school, because he did start in the 80s, Heyman's still around, too.
Uh-huh.
But I would still say, out of the living ones, it's probably Heenan right now. And he's...
Right. I think you're right with Heenan, because he managed a lot of guys and got the majority of them over. There's only a couple that he managed that he just couldn't get over. Mm-hmm. Whereas Cornette managed one guy, one team all of his life, and that was
the machines and all that stuff. But again, Fuji will be missed. Absolutely will be missed. I'm glad we got a video package during Raw Monday night, which we're going to get to, because holy smoke. Wow. Yeah, well, shall we get to the end, or shall we start at the beginning? Because I think we need to start at the end, okay? Yeah. We have a new Universal Champion, folks, and his name ain't Roman Reigns, and his name ain't Big Cass, and his name ain't Seth Rollins. His name is Kevin Owens. Now, Kevin. We, you know, when we talked about it last week, we thought it was going to be Kevin Owens, but we didn't exactly expect it to get there this way. Shane, with everything that went down in the last 5 minutes of this match, what did you think?
In the last 5 minutes, I was blindsided. I was like, what the hell did I just witness? I was like, Roman Reigns got pedigreed by Triple H. I'm like, okay, so he's helping Seth here. Jesus Christ, don't make Seth win again this way. And then all of a sudden, puts Kevin Owens in the ring and blindsides Seth and pedigrees Rollins. I was like, what the hell?
So we've had so many – we had more twists and turns than a Philadelphia pretzel in this particular match, right?
Yeah, and with how Triple H was acting to Seth, apparently he's just as salty. But I looked at it backwards from what we saw happen to Seth Rollins in there, and then I'm thinking back to some things that were happening earlier, like Seth was talking to Stephanie a lot.
Right.
And then the hug that they had with Stephanie earlier in the night. Maybe this is a little bit more of a double-layered thing. One, because Seth has not been living up to the success that Triple H would want.
Right. And okay. And yes, and I don't mean to interrupt Cindy. But Chris. But Cindy, this is Seth Rollins' face turn that we've been waiting for. Right here, right now. Correct?
Not quite. I think this happens during the match that Seth Rollins and Kevin Owens will have, I believe, at Night of Champions. That's when you're going to get the full-fledged face turn.
Except for one thing, though. If you saw the video that our good hostess Nikki Haman posted the night after on SmackDown, after the cameras went off air, and let me set that up. I know I'm going all over the place, but we'll get there. At the end of the match, AJ Styles got crotched, and Dean Ambrose was, you know, giving him the Bucking Bronco. So then John Cena ran the ropes, Roman Reigns shakes the ropes, and Seth Rollins comes out and says, looks at him, goes, "You all right, man?" Taps him on the shoulder, "You all right? Okay." And basically does the springboard off the rope again. That's a face move. I think he's turned already, don't you?
No, because it doesn't count because it was not on TV, if you remember correctly. According to TV, which is what the face heel mentality goes for, he's still tweener. He's still in between.
Right. And it's kind of looking like there might be, at least for a very short term, a possible power struggle with Owens and Seth representing Triple H and Stephanie a little bit. Because if you noticed at the end, Stephanie just looked surprised and confused. What the hell is going on? Why is he doing this to him?
But do you really believe that?
Maybe, maybe not. It just depends on what we see on Monday.
Yes, there's going to be more questions. But I will tell you, Now let me ask you this. Shane, if you're booking, why did Triple H do this?
If you're going from a personal point of view, Triple H just said, "Well, you're not good for the authority anymore. You've lost the title of Roman, and all you've done is whine and complain." So we see Kevin Owens that just brings it every time. So we're going to go with him. He's our new guy. Or if you go with business and how Triple H loves poking the internet fans, going, "We kicked you out of the authority because you've injured too many damn superstars. You're costing me money."
Ooh, interesting.
I like that. I really do.
If they could tell that. That would be an interesting story if they did that. I like that idea.
You're blurring the lines, and I will go right here. If they go with that, I will mark more than I did Tuesday night when I – well, we'll get to that when we talk about SmackDown. But I honestly do believe that we are going to get a little, the power struggle, which is true. But Night of Champions will be the time when it implodes, and we find out that Steph is swerving Seth.
Mm-hmm.
Because Stephanie really did not like Seth, even when Triple H brought him into the fold of the Authority.
Mm-hmm.
She never liked Seth. And what I probably find even weirder is that Stephanie never really liked Kevin Owens to begin with either.
Yes, but how glorious is it going to be to have him as the dick heel champion over the next couple of months?
Just gloating all over the place about it. And I think this is kind of like a rush of a plan, because I read something somewhere. I thought it was just news or something, that originally the plan was going to be Balor versus Owens at Clash of Champions anyway. So this might be just like a rush job because of Finn's injury, because of everything. So,
well, he had complete surgery this past week, and let me just find his Twitter feed, because actually he describes his surgery in great detail, or his week in great detail, actually. I need to find this out, because it's quite interesting how he describes this. Yeah, here it is. He described this a couple of days ago. He said, "What a roller coaster week. I woke up the morning of SummerSlam with nothing but positivity and feeling physically better than ever. The moment I got injured, I knew it was serious. It was an instinctive reaction to pull on my wrist. I entered survival mode. When the bell rang, I had won. I was the champion, but I was reluctant to celebrate, as I already knew in my heart what awaited at Raw. Disappointed, yes, but I was champion. I was not missing an opportunity to fulfill my duty and appear on Good Morning America on Monday. After hours of scans and despite some hope, the worst was confirmed at 5 p.m. Monday. I would need surgery as soon as possible and relinquish the title on Raw. The most difficult part of relinquishing the title was when I came back through the curtain and was overcome by a feeling of inadequacy. Despite every emotion I had that felt the previous 24 hours, I was still the champion. That gave me strength. Now I was not. Tuesday a.m., I traveled to Birmingham, Alabama. Dr. Dugas prepped me for surgery as a photo of Seth Rollins watched over us."
Oh.
Well, because I believe that's the same guy who did Seth Rollins' knee.
Oh, okay.
Okay. "What was supposed to be a one-hour surgery turned into 4 hours. As once I was opened up, the doctor found a lot more to the injury than the scan showed. 180-degree labrum tear, torn bicep and pectoral tendon, cartilage damage, and fracture to the glenoid neck socket, which I have in a jar on my dresser." Okay. "Wednesday morning at 5 a.m., I awoke after the surgery, groggy and sore. The gravity of the situation began to set in. Rehab will start at 9. Thursday, fly a.m., back to Orlando, check in, and we begin planning the comeback." And there that is. So he, and by the way, there's a picture of him FaceTiming with Kevin Owens yesterday, which is kind of cool, with Kevin Owens. Let me see if I can show you this photo. It's pretty damn cool.
I love this photo.
It's a photo of Kevin Owens. Check this out, guys and ladies. Excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
Check that out. How cool is that, guys? Shane, see, isn't that awesome?
Yeah, it's cool, because he's calling Finn while Finn's at home recovering, going, "Look what I just won."
Yes. And now, some people who wanted to eat crow about the Kevin Owens situation. Okay, so after Kevin Owens won, the first people that, of course, you know, because social media is social media, right, Chris?
Okay. Oh, yeah.
The first person who the social media people gave a ton of shit to was Jim Cornette, okay? Because you know that Kevin Owens and Jim Cornette did not like Kevin Owens to begin with, okay? You know, you guys know that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is what he told PW Insider, quote, "Well, first off, it doesn't matter to me personally, because unless Owens is wrestling the Revival sometime soon, I'm not going to see his matches as I don't watch Raw. But I'm thrilled for him and his fans and anyone who enjoys his work in the ring. The one thing I will admit that I was wrong on both Owens and El Generico / Sami Zayn is that I never thought they would change, but they did, and for the better. They just weren't going to change for what they were being paid by Ring of Honor, as he laughs. I've had a lot of people go after me on Twitter today, but the reality is we put the belt on Kevin Steen for a year of Ring of Honor, and there was a reason for that. But he's won a title I don't care about on a show I don't watch, so it doesn't affect me personally, but I'm happy for him, his fans, his family, and anyone who wants him to see him succeed. Unquote. So, Jim Cornette still can't put him over, though. He can't. He couldn't put him over. Or did he? Shane, Chris, did he put him over?
I don't think it's a fact of Jim Cornette putting him over, because we all know Jim Cornette's the guy that says if you want to get over, put yourself over. I don't have anyone hold your hand. I think that's the reason why he won't put Kevin Owens over yet, because it was, as it was seen on TV, it was still like, well, you sort of did get it handed to you, but. I know. We'll wait and see if Jim's tune changes.
Yeah, we will see, because we'll see what they do with Kevin Owens. However, and we will get to the other stuff on Raw, but this is important to me. Okay? And I saw this, and Carl, if you could put the Room 101 soundbite on standby for this asshole. Okay? And this name is Amin El Hassan. Okay? Who is a dickhead at ESPN? He basically said that because now we all know that ESPN and WWE have ties together. And he said that Kevin Owens, because Kevin Owens' son was really happy. There's a picture of Kevin Owens' son reacting to the fact that his dad won the Universal title. Now, there were rumors to the effect that he is on the autism spectrum. We haven't confirmed or denied that. You guys don't know. And again, I'm using guys as a general term, Cindy.
Yeah. Okay. That's fine.
Okay. Do we know?
I've heard, but I don't know for sure. So.
Okay. So he basically said that, and the guy said, wait till he finds out wrestling isn't real, or something to that effect. Okay. And Mick Foley, led the charge, is trying to talk to ESPN, you know, get an apology from ESPN, and other people like Ricochet, Jade, King Carino, and Amin basically said, is basically laughing his ass off at the whole thing. Okay?
Here's the thing, and this is what pisses me off about it, and this is why I feel this asshole does not deserve friggin' airtime or even breathing time. Look, the guy went for a troll. That's what he did. He basically trolled a lot of people, and he's gone after Kevin Owens' son to do it. A lot of people have bitten at it. So basically, the dickhead got what he wanted. Now, here's the thing. Now, it's not only Mick Foley that's pissed off about this. Even Cody Rhodes himself, who has left WWE, has even posted on it and given WWE some advice and said, WWE, please cut ties with both TMZ and ESPN, because sometimes social media just isn't worth it.
Mm-hmm.
Because obviously TMZ played the unfortunate 911 call that Mrs. Rhodes had to make to 911 for Dusty. And ESPN, obviously, with this stupid crap. Do I agree with Cody? Hell yes. I 100% agree. I think, yep, ESPN and TMZ, bad news for you. Into Room 101 with both of you. You're cut. You're done.
You really think they should cut the ties with ESPN?
Well, it's either that. It's either that, or if ESPN wants to get back into the public's good graces, you have that. I don't even want to call him a sack of shit because he's lower than that. But you need to get that a-hole to publicly apologize. And I mean, humiliate him like he's just tried to humiliate Kevin Owens and his 8-year-old son. Publicly get him to apologize, record the stuff, put it all over the web, and then fire his ass. That's the only way you're going to get back into the public's good graces.
Chris, do you agree?
Yes, pretty much. I've just seen that. Apparently, I haven't seen any of this video either way, but apparently, Jonathan Coachman has been roasting him like crazy because of this. So,
let me see if I can find it. Is it on his Twitter feed?
No. I've just been reading it off the fan boards that apparently he did.
Okay.
So I don't know if it was on air that he did it or off his Twitter feed that he did it. So.
Well, he actually excuse me. He basically said 2 hours. Okay, enough. Trust me, it's been handled. Let's not make it worse. Message received. Now, how about turning it positive? Oh boy. Uh oh. So Shane, interesting.
Coach, no offense to you, champ, but let's turn it positive. How in the blue hell are you going to turn that positive? You can't. There's no way you can turn an 8-year-old boy who might have autism. I've got 3 nephews that have autism, and I can tell you right now, I give Kevin Owens great respect for the restraint he has shown and not verbally abused or even flown to where this guy lives and beat the crap out of him. But yeah, Coach, there is no possible way you can turn this positive. Like I said, the only way you're getting back into the public's good graces is having that man get live on air. And hell, you can roast him on there if you want to, Coach. I don't care. But you make him publicly apologize to WWE, to Kevin Owens, and to the 8-year-old boy. And then, live on air, you fire him. That's justification.
So. Some very interesting. So let's actually just go over what happened on Raw. Chris Jericho beat Neville. A little surprise there. Now, we had 2 squash matches with Nia Jax and Braun Strowman again. Okay? And so, Cindy, is it enough time? I mean, it's funny with the whole Americo and the whole, you know, Nia Jax squash with high end. We should be done with them now, right?
Enough? No.
Okay.
No. Here's what happens. What they're going to do is they're going to feed them jobbers like they did with Ryback, mind you, because they fed Ryback jobbers for, what, the first 2-3 months when he was debuting? If you remember that.
Okay.
And it's a great way to get somebody over as being strong and powerful. That's what they're going with Nia Jax, and that's what they're going with Braun Strowman. Make them look unstoppable.
Yeah, but Cindy, here's the problem with that. John Cena ain't on Raw to stop Braun Strowman and bury him. So that's just...
Oh, jeez, man!
It won't be the same Ryback situation, I'm sorry, but it won't happen. unless this is what we're leading up to. Unless we're leading up to, because we've all heard the rumblings of Goldberg and WWE having meetings to finalize a possible return for Goldberg. Unless it's leading up to that, Braun Strowman versus Goldberg.
No.
Although it would have been fun to see Braun Strowman try to take the jackhammer, but
I reckon Goldberg could lift him up with ease.
Yeah, if he could lift up Reese and the Giant, he lifted up the Giant for the jackhammer.
Yeah, but that was also Goldberg back then compared to Goldberg now.
Yes, exactly. But again, all right, I respectfully disagree. I think it should be over, but hey.
But with Braun, it's an either-way possibility. She either should end now or just do it a little bit longer. Question with Nia is, if they do end the Jobber squashes, who does she face on Raw? Because Bayley and Sasha are both busy with Charlotte right now. And then who was... The only one I remember offhand that still is also on the Raw roster is Alicia Fox, and yeah, and Dana Brooke's wandering around with Charlotte still.
Yeah, no, Dana Brooke is wandering around with Bayley and is being the female liege to the club now.
Right, which by the way, that was a pretty funny thing about the old fart facility. That was a pretty good joke. Although she can't act her way out of a sack, Dana Brooke, not even close. It was awful. But we had Sami Zayn again selling his quote-unquote injured ankle, beating Jinder Mahal. We had Bayley. We had the New Day and Bayley defeating Dana and the Club, which was fun. That was a fun.
Can I just say Bayley and the New Day together? That is best thing ever.
Yes, comedy gold. Hey, we want some Bayley. Hey, we want some Bayley. Yes, it was.
Oh, and even then they got Bayley in on the New Day rock sing with Bay. Lee Rocks. Bay Lee Rocks.
Yes, exactly.
Bay.
So that was Duphosity. You know, it was great. But after Bayley looked, did you see that cold stare that Charlotte gave Bayley after the match? Ooh, damn. that was cold, man. That was absolutely cold. And of course, Sasha did a little update on her health. You know, she's going to be clean. Sheamus beats Cesaro, make it 2-0. And, oh, by the way, that move on the apron. Oh, that move. Holy smoke.
I have not seen reports if he is or not, but I will be damn surprised if Cesaro didn't get legitimately injured on that.
They're saying he did get injured, but we'll still put that in brackets just in case it's a word.
Storyline, yes, exactly. But yeah. It was a backdrop into the ring post. That hurt.
Moves that, like that need to be kind of stopped.
Yes. Oh, yes. Paul Heyman, you glorious bastard. Okay. So, Stephanie, you know, and Paul Heyman have words. So Paul pays the fine in $1 bills. Okay. I mean, you know, to some people, Stephanie should be used to $100 bills.
Ouch.
But he made it rain up in there with the dollar bills. Okay.
Stephanie's come a long way from being a $2. All I got is a quarter.
Yeah, exactly. You know, dirty, bottom-feeding, trash bag. Well, you know the drill. So, but that was an awesome promo, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yes, it was. And it kind of also kind of hinted at later on things, because she was trying to – he was saying that Stephanie is the heir apparent, is going to be the main owner. Mm-hmm. Well, that could be another thing Triple H is a little upset about. He said, wait a minute, I got power too now, and I'm going to show what I can do with it.
Right, and the thing was, did you see the smirk of doom that Uncle Paul gave to after Stephanie said, apology accepted, and just walked the hell off? It's beautiful.
It was
beautiful. I also liked the way they made the match pretty big. Because of the fact, you know, they had video packages for all the guys, which was great. We had another Darren Young and Titus O'Neil and Darren, and of course, yeah, this feud's going nowhere.
I'm done with it.
I mean, I love, don't get me wrong, I love Bob Backlund. Love him. Okay? Don't like the feud. Agreed?
Agreed. Yeah.
Agreed. Sorry. You go, Chris.
Yeah, Darren just needs to lock him in the crossface chicken wing, not let go for a while, and get Titus out of the way.
Yeah, but oh man.
This also points to another problem that we have with Titus O'Neil.
Titus can't
work heel. He just can't. This is the third time they've tried to work him as a serious brooding heel, and it doesn't work.
No, because you know why? Because WWE knows that the fans get behind Titus when he's a face, and they don't want to see Titus get over. So what do? They're like, no, we're going to work you as a heel because you're better as a heel. No, you're not, man.
No, he's... you're not. First of all, he can't promo for shit. You give him a live mic, and he's like, hey. You know, he's Fat Albert. I don't mean to be stereotypical, but it's the truth.
I thought we were didn't we compare him to Mushmouth the other week?
Mushmouth, that's
yeah,
right.
Yeah, he is Mushmouth.
Mushmouth, yes. So.
A name that would have gone to Ahmed Johnson 20 years ago.
Yeah.
No, Ahmed just has his own language.
Yeah. Anyway, moving on to SmackDown, which is an also there is a lot of interesting stuff going on there. So we get the response from Talking Smack, and by the way, that promo which you saw in the beginning, did you guys finally get to watch that promo, all of you?
I saw it when it was on Talking Smack. So
pretty awesome, though, right?
Yeah,
pretty insane. So, you know, in the beginning, Shane says, you know, Daniel, you may have been right, but you can't do that. So Miz comes in, and what happens is, do we get a response from Daniel Bryan? No, we get a response from Dolph Ziggler, who's going to fight him for the Intercontinental title, and we had another awesome, impassioned promo from him. And then Miz was about to fight him, but no, he leaves. Now, according to multiple reports, Daniel Bryan did not know what the heck was going to happen with this promo, and that he is not medically cleared to do this. Is Ziggler a good substitute, and where do you think this is going from here? I'll start with you, Chris.
Substitute for Daniel, I don't know. I think this is just like something that they had to stop gap because they knew Daniel was not cleared. And because of Miz, apparently from what Daniel said on, let me see where I found it. During the ESPN, here we go. During the ESPN Sports Center appearance that Daniel had, Bryan said that he has often talked about quitting WWE after seeing reflections of the live crowd, but that his wife Free would talk him out of it. He also admitted that brain testing he underwent in New York. Oh, wait, wrong section. Oh, I was reading the wrong paragraph, sorry. He explained that the banter with the two was planned when it went something that Daniel knew about in advance. He noted that Miz knows how to push his buttons and was aware of Bryan's feelings in February in his retirement. So basically, Miz kind of... Miz apparently went off script a little bit and pushed his button. I don't know how much the script Talking Smack has anyway. And Bryan said he also legitimately was about to throw a punch at Miz to close the segment, but given they were on live TV, he just decided to walk off. So that should tell you about how intense that got there.
It really got intense. It really got intense. Shane, what do you think of this whole thing?
I don't want to toot my own horn, but I called it.
that it was not, that he wasn't going to wrestle.
Yeah, hell no. I said it on last week's show. I highly doubt that they were promoting a Daniel Bryan return, because that would just be stupid. And that the person that was going to replace him would be Dolph Ziggler. And sure enough, what do I get? I get Dolph Ziggler coming out instead of Daniel Bryan. Thank you!
Yeah, but are they gonna give Ziggler the belt, or are they
bloody should? The guy is pretty much like, this is how I think, and you can see it with Dolph, like with the passion that he's throwing into his speeches now. He's like doing a last cry for give me a run, or I'm out. So he's putting everything into this feud with Miz, and beforehand when he was having his feud with with all of his previous feuds, he's doing a last cry effort for give me a run. So hopefully that WWE takes us on board and gives him a run, or otherwise I'm going to call it and say in the next couple of months you're going to be seeing Dolph Ziggler ask for his release.
And the rumor is that supposedly Alberto Del Rio is getting his release, according to the Observer. That didn't shock me at all, by the way.
No, but the question does beg an interesting counter question as well, is that if Alberto Del Rio leaves, because we all know that he's got a relationship with Paige and Paige is on strike number two, does she walk with him?
Can't.
She's on Total Divas.
And she's locked into a multi-year deal.
Look at all the divas that they're building up now. I wouldn't be surprised if she gets replaced with somebody.
Could be. You don't know. So we move on in the tag team tournament.
I love this.
Hype Brothers beat the Vaudevillains, and boy, have the Vaudevillains fallen down the ladder. Oof.
Which upsets me. I like the Vaudevillains. I think they could do a lot more, especially with the goofy segments that we've been getting on SmackDown now. I'm looking at one of the members of the next tag team match we're going to be talking about.
We're going to get there. Oh, and by the way, speaking of tag teams, wasn't it awesome that Big Cass showed that he's going to be a monster singles wrestler eventually down the road? Oof.
Yeah. Oh. And what's going to make it even better for Big Cass is that they're not necessarily, looks like they're not going to break up the Enzo and Big Cass pairing. Enzo, as we know, Enzo's got a history of injuries. He's probably going to be, at best, a tag team champion, which is what I think they might do with Enzo and Cass, because they're both still on Raw together. What I see happening is Cass is still going to be a player, but they know Cass is not that good solo on the mic. He can be okay, but he needs someone. And I think Enzo is going to be that someone to help him out.
I don't know. I got a bit worried because I saw when you saw Enzo was watching Big Cass in the background on Fallout. You saw a bit of anger from Enzo after Cass got eliminated. I don't know if he was angry at Cass for getting eliminated. He was like, "Are you kidding me, bro? Are you kidding me?" I'm like, so I don't know if WWE's trying to do a bit of a thing of, oh, we might be doing this, we might be breaking them up. But as far as Cass's mic skills go, I thought he went really well in the starting segment.
Yeah.
I especially liked his little jab at Seth going, no matter what you've told yourself for all these years, size does matter.
Yeah.
Even Roman was pissing himself off, and he's like, oh, I can't keep a straight face.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's, sorry, but it was just, you know, Big Cass is something. So, we have the Hype Brothers meeting the Vaudevillains, and then Apollo Crews loses in a good effort to AJ Styles. I like that sort of match. That was fun. That was cool.
It's always good to have little quick matches like that, get mixing people up that normally wouldn't go against each other, and they gave Cruz a good enough effort, and then hopefully they can do something more with him besides just giving him a spelling gimmick.
I need to know, and then we get to the next segment. Holy crap. Renee Young, bless her heart, had to deal with Heath Slater in his trailer with his quote-unquote wife, and I don't believe that was his real wife. At least I hope not.
It isn't. I've seen the pictures of his real wife.
Much better looking?
Yeah. Let me see if I can find the pictures. Well, we keep talking while I look, if I can find.
No, I thought this was an all right segment. It is. I wouldn't say it's giving Heath and Rhino a push, but it's sort of giving them a bit more bit of spotlight,
which is always needed, because that's one of the things that recent WWE has kind of fallen behind on, is giving the wrestlers more of a full on character rather than just telling us stuff. It's more show don't tell is the way of saying it, and they don't usually do that until these kind of segments. And I think I've found a good picture. Hang on.
Well, I mean, but again, this reminded me of, and this you've heard multiple times, what was it, Nydia and Jamie Noble? Okay, and I mean, the redneck humor was cool. I thought Rhino was brilliant with the whole just eating the crackers and the cheese whiz and the little cocktail weenies, you know.
Rhino's used to that sort of stuff. He is from Detroit, after all.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I just wanted to take.
Oh, hot damn! Really?
Yep.
Oh, hello.
If that is Heath Slater's wife, no offense to you, Heath, punching above your weight. Respect.
Yeah.
He's taking after Mick Foley, and some people might argue Daniel Bryan, but
yes,
Kevin Owens as well.
Okay,
Kevin Owens.
I wouldn't say Daniel Bryan's punching above his weight. Mick Foley. Yeah, his wife.
Excuse me. His wife was a couple of weight classes above, as we all go, and going by your terminology. But that segment was funny. It was a little cringeworthy. But it was funny overall.
Yeah.
I mean, it was interesting. Although
I worry about Rhino checking out Renee at the end, because you know who she's really dating.
Yeah.
Rhino wants to give her the gore.
Yeah. Bright,
no, you know, it's setting up for a Rhino title shot.
No, Rhino's still running. Of course, we have a Bray Wyatt sermon to Randy Orton, and they make the match Orton-Wyatt. Where do you see that one going?
Nowhere.
Meaning?
It's going to be a nothing match. It's going to be like every single Wyatt feud that we've had. Wyatt says something spooky and meaningful or something like that. And Orton, who's clearly punching below his weight class when it comes to this feud, is going to beat him clean as a sheet, and the Cosmic Ballet goes on. It's like every single Wyatt feud that we've had when he goes up against a megastar. It doesn't work.
Well, I'm hoping that this is the turning of fortune.
Me too.
Because, in all honesty, I've had enough. Bray Wyatt has been getting shit on by WWE. He deserves a goddamn WWE championship run. Has done for the past 2 years. Should have beaten the streak.
Right.
Should have beaten the streak, or at least should have won that feud that proclaimed him the new face of fear and all that bullshit with the Brothers of Destruction. But instead, he gets crapped on and crapped on and crapped on, and now he's doing this feud with Orton, who, no offense, dude, you got made to look like a bitch from Brock Lesnar. There's no recovering from that. So you might as well take a L to Wyatt and just do the whole...
Well, I hope not.
Although I would... speaking of Orton and Brock Lesnar, now that we know that they're having a house show, I would laugh if for some odd reason they decided to give Orton the win on a house show instead
they
of
SummerSlam. They would, because it's not on TV.
Right.
Unless cameras are there.
Oh, cameras will be there. There definitely will be there.
But you understand what I mean. It's just the idea that, you know... Why they're doing a second one at that house show, I don't know. You know?
I think it's to work around having to pay Lesnar less. They could charge him less for a house show. I think Lesnar gets will charge less for a house show than he would like a Raw or a pay-per-view.
I highly doubt it. I'll bet bottom dollar that he's still getting paid the same amount that he would be getting paid if he was on Raw or SmackDown.
Yes, with or without drug test fails.
See what you did there.
Yeah, well, you know my theory on this. I don't think Lesnar should have even been in the match at SummerSlam.
Agreed.
I told you that before. I don't believe he should have been there. It would have been nice, but I think the WWE is still dealing with this. However, we had a return 16 years. Well, first of all, before we do that, we also had Carmella and Nikki, still getting around, getting in there, because there was a tag team match where Nikki was on commentary and Carmella attacked her, which was Alexa Bliss and Natalya versus Naomi and Becky Lynch. However, Rhino and Slater advanced after they beat the Headbangers. What?
Yay!
Wow, that was kind of cool to see. No,
it was. And go ahead.
Sorry, you guys, Cindy.
All right, I loved the Headbangers when I was a kid, in 97, 98, and I even liked the reunion that they had in late 99, 2000 after the whole terrible domestic violence angle that they did with Chaz and his then girlfriend, which was just awful. Mm-hmm. But getting back to the Headbangers, they could still go, and they still are currently going on the independent scene as the Headbangers. And if you want to add a feeder tag team, that wouldn't be a bad way to go with the Headbangers, because they still look fresh as a daisy. They haven't even aged since the late 90s.
Yeah, I was actually gonna say the same thing. Like, I remember watching the Headbangers in the 90s, and I was like, they don't even look like they've changed. Like, sorry if I did get this wrong, but Mosh looks like he's put on a few pounds. But other than that, yeah, they look like they've aged a day.
Thrasher's in pretty damn good shape.
Yeah,
they both were,
especially considering Thrasher was possibly almost had a career-ending injury, but he managed to get out of that problem.
Mm-hmm.
But
the only disappointment was they didn't bring their old theme with them, apparently.
I don't think they probably could have gotten a license for it. And then, of course, we had a no contest between Dean Ambrose and Baron Corbin, because AJ Styles got to get away, but his crotch got the worst of it.
His poor huevos, as he put it on Talking Smack.
Yes, his poor huevos, absolutely. But it was quite interesting, to say the least. I mean, it was pretty. Now, who won the week this week? Raw by a mile.
Yeah.
Raw by a mile. They both had good ratings, but the Universal title match and the 5 swerve was just, you know, it was outstandingly good. But let me tell you something. Looking at the WWE schedule, they go to Manila for one show? Let me see what we got here. Just to be sure, if that's okay. Just take a look to all events here. Kansas City. Oh, yeah. Okay. So the WWE, they go to London on Wednesday. Okay.
Are we talking this week or next week?
This week. And then WWE Live Manila in the Mall of Asia Arena. And then they go to China at the Shanghai Arena. And then because they have three shows. One in China. Well, actually, I'm sorry. Two shows. One in China, one in Richmond. And then we're going to the next page. Where was the next page? Okay. That's right. Because SmackDown is having the pay-per-view, a lot of the Raw crew is going over.
Hmm.
Okay, because this Sunday is Backlash, and next week will be a Pick'ems card, for those who don't know.
Just a quick thing. Who is Pick'em's champion, by the way?
Oh. I don't remember.
I don't think we didn't go over them last week, so.
No. It was just absolutely, I know somebody has them, I just don't know. I'll find out by next week.
Henniger's got them.
It's all right, guys. The champion's me. You don't need to check it or anything. Just take my word for it.
Very good.
I thought it was vacant because he has every title every now and then.
Oh, and also just to let you know, we have Kota Ibushi and Grand Metalik advancing in the cruiserweights.
Yes, and I want to say this. I'm not sure how I should feel about us seeing a Burning Hammer in the cruiserweight open, because one, it was awesome to see it, but it only got a 2 count. Doesn't sit right with me for some reason.
Okay.
Who kicked out of it? Kendrick?
No, Kendrick hit the move on Kota, and Kota kicked out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that just tells you that Kota's a tough son of a bitch. I don't.
Well,
I think that's. Like, I agree that, yeah, the Burning Hammer is a very unique move and is something that you rarely should kick out of, but if you're trying to promote. Which obviously they are trying to promote Ibushi being very tough and hard hitting. Then yeah, you gotta got a kick out of it.
And also season 3 of Lucha Underground debuts next week. That's going to be fun. Of course, that will be on the El Rey Network, and I believe they are cleared for season 4. Now, I believe they shot 2 and 3 back to back, if I remember correctly, right? Or do you remember that, guys?
I think they shot them in close proximity, but not really back to back. I think they had it like a 3-month breath. And for 4 is going to be taping in the fall. And we mentioned earlier in the show Del Rio leaving. I wouldn't be shocked to see Del Rio being Lucha Underground in season 4.
I wouldn't be surprised to seeing that either myself. Oh, and by the way, just as a funny thing, just as a little sort of on the road report, I was at the Field of Honor show on Saturday. About 1,000 people at MCU Park in Brooklyn. A lot of New Japan people. Adam Cole. No titles changed hands. Ring of Honor actually took a little bit of a step down, in my personal opinion. It felt like the card was a little, not amateurish, but a little unprofessional, if you understand what I mean. Not bad, but okay. You know, I mean, the last two matches were great. But I again, still go to see a Ring of Honor card. Really cool stuff.
Oh, speaking of Ring of Honor news, just announced this week on the 30th, Ring of Honor is debuting a 6-man tag team championship. This was announced by Kevin Kelly
The
official Ring of Honor website.
Sort of like a trios champion?
Yeah, it's going to be a trios style championship.
Oh, nice. And by the way, I think I know who is going to get the first shot at it, personally, or at least.
Bullet Club.
No, the Cabinet.
The Cabinet?
Yes, that's Rhett Titus, Kenny King, and somebody else whose name escapes me. But, yes. That will
Matt Taven?
I'll check who the Cabinet is in ROH. Just give me a second. All right. The Cabinet in ROH, that would be, just hold on a second.
Because I know Jay Lethal is going to be fighting Michael Elgin at the next pay-per-view.
Yeah, Elgin had a very, 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 very good. The All Night Express and Caprice Coleman, they would make wrestling great again. So it's kind of cool. Kind of cool, yes.
Caprice Coleman had to do something ever. He's been floundering ever since the breakup of CNC Wrestle Factory.
Yes, and Alexander. And by the way, the cruiserweight. Speaking of which, the cruiserweight division debuts 2 weeks from Monday. Oh yes, go right ahead. We'll do that in a minute. 2 weeks from Monday, the cruiserweight division starts. Who do you think is going to win? We're down to the final four, Chris. We got Grand Metalik. We got Ibushi.
TJ Perkins.
TJ Perkins, former Manic.
My personal favorite.
And Zack Sabre, right, I believe?
I was trying to avoid the spoilers because those other two matches have not aired yet.
Whoops, sorry.
But since they're out there in the open now, I'm not sure about Ibushi and Sabre because I don't know if they've actually signed contracts and I don't know if they want to give the win to somebody who hasn't. Grand Metalik apparently has signed a contract and I think Perkins might have too, so it's going to be down between one of those two, I believe. We will see.
Mm-hmm. But I smell a Spite TNA thing going.
Okay.
It's going to be Perkins. My prediction is Perkins is going to walk.
Okay. Yeah, so what did Dan Severn say about Lesnar, Chris?
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, apparently somebody on Reddit AMA asked Dan Severn about Brock Lesnar being a dual sport athlete and such, and all the incidents with his drugs. Here is what he had to say. Lesnar and his mouthpiece claim that he's the new beast incarnate, or whatever he refers to him as. He's acting like he's the first wrestler to hold a belt in both wrestling and UFC. Yet, I carried my NWA title out to the cage, and it sat next to my UFC title. Brock never did that. And you know, one of us has never tested positive for PEDs, and one of us has not. WWE made such a big deal of them coming out at UFC 200. In 1 year, I kept up with WWF's schedule, working at NWA and cage fighting. I was on the road 20 days a month. I had to look in a daily planner to find out if I was a cage fighter or a professional wrestler at the time. The point is, Brock has done a total of 9 matches in his entire career. I did 8 in 1 year while under contract with the WWE. So once again, there is no comparison.
You got some aloe for that burn? Damn. He's not wrong, you know.
Yeah. I just thought that was a major shot that was saying. Admittedly, the Severn's UFC and Lesnar's era of UFC is a lot is different because of rules and everything. I don't know all the differences, but
no. Dude,
yeah, the very fact that Severn was able to do all that wrestling and UFC at the same time just says something about his character and his personality and everything.
Well, I gotta ask though, Cindy, isn't Lesnar's, you know how Lesnar is, I believe his image has been tarnished a little bit. No?
A little bit? It's heavily tarnished.
Okay.
I mean, when we thought that Lesnar beat Mark Hunt at UFC 200, that he was unstoppable. That he was amazing, that he took a fight on such short notice and trained heavy and hard, and boom, it worked out. Then we found out that he tested positive, and this is also not including another time he tested positive in the NFL, mind you, in late 2004 when he was trying out for the Vikings. I'd say that Lesnar is one of the most tarnished athletes of all time.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
If you're talking about fighters who do it clean, he goes into the same boat as people like Antonio Bigfoot Silva, John Jones, and all of these other hypocrites who claim that they would never take a PED, and boom, they're caught. I'm done. I'm just done with Lesnar.
Yeah, okay. We're pretty much almost done with this show. Cindy, you have stuff to promote, including a Wayne winner.
Yeah. First of all, we'll get to that later, but first of all, the wrestling pluggage. I am writing currently for Angry Marks, a competitor of WrestleChat.net, where I do the weekly winners and losers column. But that took a week off because I was vacationing in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And game show wise, GameShowGarbage.com, the second best game show website out there.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Right behind GameShowNewsNet.com.
Thank you.
We have a new induction, per se. It's a mixture of the Games of 90 and a pure induction in the Win, Lose, or Draw Rob Weller season, which is just utter crap beyond all imagination. And this month in September, we did have a Wayne winner. We did the new poll, only three finalists out of the six. And it comes as no surprise to me and you, Jason, what won.
Yes, exactly. And the thing is, on the preview show, we called it to the T. We called it to the T. So, Chris, do you have anything
I'm still waiting on getting a good time for both Nikki and myself to get to another paper review right now. But other than that, I don't really have anything to promote, really.
Shane, yourself?
No, I don't have anything to promote, but would like to say a happy birthday to the late, great Bam Bam Bigelow for today.
Absolutely, yes. Lots of things to promote here on my end, of course. First of all, Ticona 7 is officially set for August 4th to 6th, 2017. The dates are set. They're on their Facebook page and Ticona.org. The game show Showdown, because certain people don't like the word marathon, you know who they are. Mm-hmm. The games list has been announced. I think the schedule's pretty cool. And if you still want to donate to this year's marathon, you can do that for the next 3 months or so at Home Game Enterprises with a Z / marathon. There's a donate now. Ah, yes, we're going to get to that in a minute. Yes, I'm sorry. I completely forgot about that. But before, you know, Ticona.org. I'm sorry, homegameenterprises.com/marathon and donate. And yes, Shane, you forgot about that. Yes, I did not mean to backhand Mr. Roman Reigns. Why don't you tell us about that last story? I'm so sorry. We'll do the plugs again in a second. Just go ahead.
Oh, man, I couldn't believe this myself when I read it, so I don't blame you for like letting it pass by you.
No, it's but, just yeah. I completely forgot about it. So
Roman Reigns, so this is a big FU and flip off to all you Roman Reigns haters. Roman Reigns has made it to the top of PWI. That's right. Roman Reigns, number one.
And Nikki said, and she's right, during the last year, he was on top of the world for most of it. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, we look at the top 10, okay? And,
Well, I'll have to say Roman deserves it just for getting cheered in Philadelphia after he got booed the hell out of in Philadelphia at the Royal Rumble in the same year. So,
The number 10 is Cena, number 9 is Ambrose, number 8 is Rollins, number 7 is Nakamura, 6 is Owens, 5 is Jay Lethal, and that's a good spot for him to be in because of his almost, 2-year-long reign as champion?
Yep.
Almost. Styles is at 4, Balor 3, Okada at 2, and Roman at 1, okay? And, of course, there was a typo because if you look at the actual JPEG of it, which I really can't – I think I can print this in here. I hope I can. Take a look at this. There is that. There are some interesting names there. I'm trying to see who is, like, number 11, like 11, 12, you know, people like that, those numbers. Well, they have Drew Galloway also at 10, so he probably is maybe 11. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Matt, I think Mr. Broken Matt Hardy wants this PWI list deleted.
What? Yeah.
Delete. 33. Delete.
Delete. Jeff Hardy's at 67. I'm just trying to see.
Good work, PWI. You stuffed it up. Jeff Hardy doesn't exist anymore. He's Brother Nero, goddammit.
Adam Cole is number 45. Cesaro's 55. Interesting. Big E is at 38. Jay Briscoe's at 30. Let's see.
I'm trying to find Mr. Irrelevant.
Yeah.
Hey, Buddy Murphy over the halfway mark at 227. Yeah.
Zack Sabre Jr.'s at 28.
I thought I read somewhere that Cody Hall was on here, but I don't see him here.
I see him at 359.
There you go. That's a good early day start for
World
Mr. Hall.
Ospreay, number 16. That's a pretty good number.
Nice.
Kenny Omega's number 23. Let's see. Sami Zayn's at 40. By the way,
Lance Archer, who people might know as Vance Archer or Lance Hoyt, is number 100.
Bobby Roode's at 70. Ryback's at 30. Won't be that high next year.
I don't think he'll be even on the list next year.
At least I think we found out who the superior brother was with the Usos, because Jey Uso is number 90 and Jimmy Uso is 99. It's like, I know it's much higher than you.
Yeah. Which one's married to Naomi?
Jimmy, I think.
Yeah, Alberto Del Rio is 29.
Going by Jimmy being married to Naomi, he's the real winner in all this. But
oh, Brock Lesnar is 19, and The Miz is 22. Interesting.
Don't, I wouldn't expect Brock Lesnar to be on that list after next year.
And Samoa Joe is 14 here, so.
Well, he could go into the top 10 next year.
Oh, yeah.
Ricochet is 15. Interesting number there. I don't see 12. Oh, yeah. Tetsuya Naito. I saw him wrestle. Sheamus is at 17. Interesting number there. Hiroshi Tanahashi. We saw him on 27.
Hold on, guys. I'll be right back.
And how the heck did Victor get up to 216, right?
Undertaker's not on the list, very interestingly enough. And I'm just trying to think of some other numbers here.
Well, can you really put a guy on there that wrestles like once or twice a year?
Michael Elgin is 18. Very good. And, of course, this is all subjective. We all know this.
Right.
But Sammy Callahan is 172. Let me see. Have we found Mr. Irrelevant, number 500?
The closest I found, I know Raphael King is 490.
Well, Chris Parrish is 495.
I could have swore I saw 499.
Wolfgang Danger is 498.
Eric Amanian is 499.
Amanian?
Eric Amanian. EM. He's right under my
belt. Got it. I'm just trying to see if we can find 500. Who Mr. quote unquote Mr. Irrelevant is.
Michael Elgin is number 18.
That's what I just said, yeah.
Wow.
Mr. Pectacular's 143.
Gotta love the bromans.
Yeah, they're all good. But again, it's all...
No Way Jose is number 475.
He's got to be in there somewhere. So, let's just get back to the plugs again. One more time. Of course, WLTI, we recorded all the programs here. WLTI, BS Big Show. We had our draft last Saturday, which was a fun show. And we recorded our season preview on Tuesday. Because a week from today, as we record this, football season starts again. We're Touch 'Em All is going to be recorded, I believe, tomorrow night, because we're into pennant chase mode. Red State Blue State is a little on hiatus. We'll have Pixel Nation. Pixel Nation is back because our good friend Brian Henniger is back from Las Vegas. Here we go. And all the shows you can hear on Spectrum1.net, TuneIn Radio, Player.fm, Stitcher Radio, Apple iTunes, Google Play Music, Overcast, and pretty much any place you can get it, we have it. That's all the news we have this week. For Shane, for Chris, for Cindy, thank you all for being here. Will Nikki be back next week? We don't know, but we will find out the fallout from the Universal title. And we're going to have pick'ems, and Henniger has to be here next week. One of us, Henniger or VRM, has to be here because we had a pay-per-view to pick up. It's Backlash, and we're going to get a card, hopefully, on SmackDown. We've got a couple matches happening. We have AJ Styles versus Ambrose. We have Miz versus Ziggler. We have the six-pack challenge for the women's title, and we'll probably have more matches set up for that pay-per-view, I am guessing. For Chris, for Shane, for Cindy, this is Jason Block, and of course for the missing host Nikki Heyman, and for the always loved Jim Williams, we miss you. We want you back as soon as possible. Get better soon.
Two drains!
Yes, two drains. We'll see you soon, brother, and we'll be back. This is Jason Block. We'll see you next time.
The preceding podcast has been a presentation of Spectrum One, online and on demand at SpectrumOne.net.